give us perspective on how the ILC effort was launched in the global design effort.
Okay, so I think I think the ILC community has gone through many of those struggles that the GWP community will be going through. What I've tried to do here is fairly dense, so I'll have to go through this quickly to tell you about the history of what was successful, what the failures were, and hopefully this will be informative. So the general lessons are: work toward realizing the high energy electron positron neutron collider. It has been coordinated globally since 2005, and we haven't got there yet. Following the demise of the SOC, the global community realized that largest projects, $1 billion and larger, needed advance for high energy physics must be realized through global cooperation. And generally, some of the advantages gained this way are the global community taking ownership of one common concept and design. The effort and resources toward realizing this design were shared globally, and the governments and funding agencies recognized the community's effort to optimize value from precious public resources. So the outline of what I'm going to talk about is just the science drivers, the international coordination that comes through IFPA, which is comparable to GWIT, the lessons from the SSC, the history of the regional efforts and global collaboration, and now we have what's called the Project Implementation Plan, which is a 50-page document describing what's the elements are viewed for meeting progress and success. So just quickly, of course, we know there's the LHC. It addresses physics at the energy frontier, which is the Higgs boson electron symmetry breaking. It's continuing to go on for a couple more decades, understanding the Higgs and exploring open questions like dark matter, grand unification, and extra dimensions. So if the LHC exists, why do we need an ILC? Well, the LHC collides complex systems of quarks and gluons, and the interesting interactions are between subcomponents, a fraction of the total energy, whereas the ILC collides electrons and positrons, which are fundamental particles, and the interesting interactions are between the beam particles. Furthermore, the LHC collisions involve the strong interactions. In the ILC, there's no strong interaction collisions, so you get cleaner interactions, you get higher precision, and the need for a high-energy electron-positron collider as the next major energy physics project was endorsed globally already by 2001. And this was supported in presentations to HEPAP, to the NRC, overseas studies, similar to what Ray was endorsing. There have been many reports that have strongly come out in support in the era of the LHC that there was a need for a high-energy electron-positron collider to advance particle physics. This just illustrates some of the comparable precisions to the LHC. What's shown here is the couplings of the Higgs boson to different final states, Z bosons, Ws, B quarks, and so forth. The precision that can be achieved. Oops, I see. I'm messing this up somehow. The precision that could be achieved, shown in green, is the precision that one expects eventually to achieve with the LHC. And what's shown in red and yellow are the precisions that can be achieved with the ILC. So given that we expect it's likely that some of these couplings will not be consistent with the standard model, one wants to make the most precise measurements of these couplings that we can do, and that's where the ILC's role comes in. In addition to that, the ILC has the capability of other new science, such as electroweak states that may be outside of the capability of the LHC, given its background from strong interactions. So there's a body that's comparable to GWAC, which is ICFA, and it's a committee for future accelerators. It was created in, GWIC. It was created in 1976. Has 15 members representing all of the countries involved in high energy physics, and it's been a key partner in developing the plan for the global strategy. It has had this policy of participation in host facilities that are located around the world, where scientists from other regions of the world were invited and welcome to come to work in those facilities. So Fermilab, for example, had many foreign collaborators coming from Europe and Japan. And this strategy worked very well, but by 2000, there was a growing realization that large future projects required more coordinated global planning. Now, what I wanted to do is just mention some of the lessons that we learned from the super collider. Everybody knows this is a case that was a great failure, or at least from the particle physics perspective. And I tried to identify some of the key elements that led to that failure. There are many. First of all, the U.S. bypassed global planning to propose the SSC. It was an American project. It was a gigantic step in size and complexity. There was a debate in Congress on foreign participation, people taking both sides of that issue. The cost rose in part due to design enhancements. The cost and schedule tracking was never fully implemented. The national interest in federal budget reduction was present. And there was an opposition in the broader scientific community, which is a key element that one has to keep in mind. And so the lessons that come from this set of failures is, in my mind, to plan globally, to respond to the requirements for large projects, to obtain political support for global plans, to maintain a cost budget, that means understanding early what the contingencies that might be needed for things that you don't understand at the beginning, provide good auditing of cost and schedule as you go forward, explain the value of the project in an era of austerity and attitudes towards federal spending, and in particular, convince other fields of the scientific importance of this project to dampen down any possible opposition from other scientific communities. Now, after the SSC failed, ICFA urged global support for the LHC to establish worldwide unity. The U.S. community transferred its SSC expertise and experience to global effort on the LHC projects. And today, roughly half of the particle physicists in the U.S. are participating in LHC projects. In 2003, the next step after efforts towards the linear collider grew, the global funding agencies established an informal venue to share information on future particle collider accelerator projects. This is known as SPALC, and this would be comparable to GWAC. It involves the countries listed here, European, Asian, and America. And it meets regularly, roughly twice a year, to discuss things. ILC has been its primary focus, since that's the next collider that one hopes to envision. And one of the key elements of this in the ILC era has been to provide a modest common fund for central infrastructure for the global effort. Not to support the R&D, that comes from the funding agencies separately, but to provide a common support for secretarial office support, travel for committees, various things like that. That's been very helpful. Now, the ILC itself has been widely viewed as the next step. The SLAC facility was converted into a linear collider in the last century, and it successfully pioneered the concept, and it was recognized that continued progress in the field called for a high-energy electron-positron collider to complement the LHC. The physics motivation was strong, and there became competing technologies in the different regions of the world. In Europe and Germany, there was Tesla. It was a European project, but it was led by Germany. Japan had the JLC, the US had the NLC, and there were other competing ideas on how to realize this next step in particle physics. So Europe's Tesla stands for TV Energy Superconducting Linear Accelerator, and it basically is built on superconducting technology for the accelerating gradients in the machine. It published a technical design report. In the US, I don't think we'd ever consider that to be up to the standard of a technical design report, but it was a very push forward, proposed to the German government, and ultimately wasn't supported in favor of going back to the global community to look for a global project. In the US, we had an alternative approach, which was called X-band warm accelerating technology as opposed to superconducting technology. And with that technology, you can achieve a higher gradient. So that was gave it the competitive advantage, and that was led by SLAC. And then in Japan, there was a very similar technology to the JLC. So we had all these different approaches going on at the early part of this century. By that time, the ICFA was looking at these different competing technologies, which were not advancing. And so they established the Technical Review Committee, to look at these different technologies. And they said all four of these could be realized, but they said two of them stood out as being mature enough to go forward with now, superconducting RF and X-band. So that was basically what was the concept of Tesla and the concepts of JLC and NLC. And they proposed that by 2004, there should be a choice made from these two technologies based on a number of considerations so that the global community could coalesce around one concept. Well, this committee recommended in 2004 the superconducting RF. And I tell you, this was a very painful moment for those who were advocating X-band. It was a major change in the approach that people had to absorb. But despite the difficulty that was for people, the worldwide community rallied around this decision and began an effort to develop a design based on this one technology, which had been advanced by the Europeans in Germany. Out of that came the establishment of a global design effort, the GDE. A director was selected, was Barry Barish, and then the director began coordinating activities worldwide. There was no centralized organization. The regional groups worked on things in a coordinated way. They went to their science budget agencies and got R&D support. This common fund for the central infrastructure that FALC provided was very helpful in creating this common activity. And they worked hard on advancing the R&D. In the US, there was something like $35 billion a year for several years going into the R&D advances, which is appropriate for a multi-billion dollar project. One critical aspect was to develop credible cost estimates for the scope and cost. And of course, the R&D fed into that. Understanding the design in a detailed way was critical. And there were agreed upon transparent cost conversions between the countries where various aspects of the cost are treated differently. So in the end, this culminated in a detailed technical design report in 2013. It's five volumes. The physics volume is very detailed, going through all the various capabilities that the ILC brings, especially in light of the existence of the LHC. A very detailed accelerator design, detectors, and detailed cost estimate, which turns out to be 7.8 billion ilkus. An ilku is $212.
That's not the year, that's the quantity.
Well, this is the problem when you have funding coming from many different currencies. So we have an ilku. Now, once this was in place, an implementation plan was developed. And you may find this to be a useful document. It's a 52-page document that was created by the ILC Governments Committee, which was set up by the Lunar Glider Board, which sits under ICFA. And the idea here was to actually go through and look at solutions to very many aspects that come into play when you try to create a global project. The report was developed over many years, and in 2015 it was updated, which was then informed by the Japanese proposal to host. So when this whole process started, it was expected that every region would push hard to be host for the International Lunar Glider. As things have evolved, it's become the Japanese who have taken the lead. They've now got a site chosen up in northern Japan for the preferred location, and this then is informing the update of this report. And also the experience from the international projects of comparable size, such as ITER, the European XFEL at DAISY, and the European Spallation Source. Now, some of the messages are that have been applied here are what not to do and what to do, and so that was all integrated into this report. And it covers this list of, so I thought I could get this laser pointer to work. Okay, so this list of topics, there's chapters on all these in this 52-page document. I thought I could go through just a few of these to highlight some of the things that it points out. So under governance, it begins by making a point that the scientific mission must be clearly stated. It recommends a mechanism for legal status to allow the most cost-effective, flexible, and transparent approach to constructing the project and operating it. Comes up with a management structure that's very similar to successful structures in other projects such as CERN, with the council having the ultimate decision-making authority, but the management vested in the director general and the director, so that they have the ultimate authority as to what, how to operate and move forward. There's recommendations on representation from the different countries, voting structures, how finances would be voted on, given that there are members of the council who have more at stake financially than others, as different countries have different contributions. And then it talks about a duration, which is 8 years of construction and 20 years of operation. It goes into funding models, the contingency, how it's spent, the director's authority to use it, a common fund, details on that. It says a host should contribute more than 50% of the project, and this has been an issue that's been discussed a lot as to what the contribution should be from other countries. And then discussions on the operational costs. Now the IFPA guidelines that I referred to earlier basically are the model where you have a host country operating a facility and collaborators coming from overseas. The costs of the operations are handled by the local country. In this case, since this is meant to be a global facility, those guidelines get modified to divide the cost to reflect the participation by many countries. There's a discussion of project management where you have the host country and the project team. It recommends division of responsibilities and how the different two elements would contribute to the overall construction. And then how the contributions would come in from the participating countries. So it recommends in-kind contributions with a large fraction of the total cost from in-kind contributions. Flexible approaches are recommended, large and small stakeholders, and so on and so forth, a number of different issues. So that project implementation plan is viewed as being a really solid guidance on how one would move forward if we can get this project off the ground. And here's the kind of the history of what's been going on. This global design effort was formed, as I said, in 2005, so a little over a decade ago. Then in 2011, the Japanese have expressed a strong interest to host the project. The technical design review was completed. Based on a very detailed and successful R&D effort and a very reliable, we believe, cost estimate. And the Japanese have decided on a preferred site. So at the current time, the Japanese ministry, which is responsible for many things, including science, is preparing for a decision. It has set up many very eminent study groups looking for physics, reviewing the physics that was defined in the TDR from the Japanese perspective to reassure themselves that this has high quality, looking at the cost and technical design report, the manpower needs, are there enough manpower in the world to do this project, and various broader impacts of the project. And they're engaged in international discussions. They're visiting DOE from time to time to discuss how to move forward to try to prepare for a formal decision, which now looks like it could happen in 2018. So that's a quick glance at what has happened in developing the ILC. Let me just summarize by saying the view is that billion-dollar scale facilities are too large for a single country, including the United States, and they require global planning and approval. There must be very clear, strong, and widely appreciated scientific motivation and value. And this has to be appreciated by the public, by the broader scientific community, and by government leaders. So the recommendation is to work together globally early enough to build the global ownership of a design and an effort, part of the mature system, working on all these different things, prototyping, industrial readiness, validated costs, and plans for risk mitigation when you're talking about such a big project. The potential for serious issues is large, and one has to be able to deal with those. Important elements of the goal plan, which are in our PIP, are management and governance, host responsibilities, cost sharing and in-kind contributions, and a plan for contingency, and that includes other than cash, because cash is not always the easiest thing to bring into a contingency situation. Okay, thank you very much for your time.
Just say a little bit about what happens after 2018. I suppose you've got an approval from and they won't go ahead, and then you begin going around to the governments and getting contributions in line. Is that how it's working on?
I think what I described was there's discussions going on currently between the MECS, the Diet, and member 10, the sanctity. Leaders of the ILC in Japan, meeting with Department of Energy people in Washington on a regular basis and discussing. So recently, actually, a discussion group was created with specific membership, including Sherry Murray, Jim Segrist from the U.S. side, and others from the people from MECS, to meet on a regular basis to discuss the issues. One of the issues that's come up is, can we reduce the cost of this project in some way? And there's potential for improvement in the accelerated gradients of various ideas about the surface preparation of the cavities in our cavities. How much would that impact the cost? So they're beginning to discuss these. Basically, the first formal step of government-to-government collaboration. Now, this has been going on for some years. There had been this view from the time that the Japanese proposed the host, they've been wondering how to proceed. They've created these study groups in Japan to go through and look at everything in detail, come back and decide that they're ready to go. Now they've decided what they really need to do is get the U.S. on board, make a strong two-party agreement. And they're also discussing, of course, with European partners and the Koreans and so forth. But the first step is to get a strong agreement between the U.S. and Japan. So there is this discussion group. I think in 2018, one would be a point where it was pretty clear. I mean, DOE always already has the roadmap that says ILC is an important part of the future of the high energy physics research program. So they have that goal. And then the question is how to realize it. They'll have these discussions between now and 2018, then they'll be in a position to actually go to Congress and get the funding for this. I mean, I don't know how better to start that.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to originally ask that question, but I'll amplify it a little. Could you explain a little bit of the role of DPAC and D5, things that we don't have in our field, and what role are they playing?
Okay, so HEPAP is a body that's set up originally by the Department of Energy, but also now by the National Science Foundation for many years, to advise in the U.S. to devise those funding agencies on high energy physics. And it meets about three times a year, and here's reports both from government leaders and also from members of the high energy community, lab directors and whatnot, on recent progress, on plans for the future, and so forth. They created a committee called P5, which is Particle Physics Project Prioritization, and of course, already have four P's, so you have a panel in there, right? P5. They created that close to 20 years ago now, I can't remember, 15 or 20 years ago, to actually spend more time than PPAP can in looking at future plans and to basically develop a roadmap for future energy physics. And they've gone through this about three times now over that period of time. different committees have been established each time, talking about how the U.S. should contribute to neutrino physics, which is the main goal of Fermilab, to the LHC, and to the ILC. And that P5 report then is written up each time by this group that looks for more than a year, basically, each time a new roadmap is developed, is written up, brought to HEPAP, and basically accepted by HEPAP as the plan for the future of the field. Whenever you hear Jim Segrist, who's the head of the Division of High Energy Physics at DOE, talk about future of high energy physics, he talks about two future big facilities that the U.S. will be involved in, which is the high luminosity LHC and the ILC. The high luminosity LHC is a little more clear how to realize that, because it's basically moving forward with upgrading the LHC. The ILC is basically what we just talked about, and there's still a lot of political issues that need to be resolved. Next slide. Gabby?
Yeah, I have a question about the job of the science department, and I have to take it. The question is, looks like it took 8 years for this group from conception to delivery of the design, and then 5 more years for possibility of funding. Can you tell us what were the...
Well, that was... Okay, so...
What took so long?
Well, that wasn't the plan. The plan was to do it much more quickly. It was met with delays due to reality, and there were other reports that were produced along the way to, like, there's a thing called the reference design report, which was the first the step towards the technical design report, which was meant to be a set of documents. It was about three volumes, I guess, physics, detectors, accelerator. That you could put on the table and say, let's go for this. Of course, the ambition of American physicists was to build this thing in the US, and there was a time in which people imagined that this might be Fermilab's future, is to build an ILC, but that was not a practical possibility given the funding realities of what was possible with the DOE. Well, it's a huge project, so I mean, as much as you push and try to make it happen on the time scale that you would like, there are so many issues one has to deal with, and especially the political issues, the financial issues, all of this. One has to do the best job on the physics and technologies that you can so that these others can somehow work their way through. There was no internal friction. I wouldn't use the word friction. It was very... very positive global. The global design effort was worked very, very well. There was a division of responsibilities to the different groups around the world who wanted to work on this thing or that thing, the damping rings, the final focus, the superconducting RF. In many cases, it's obvious who is strong in one area versus another. And it was coordinated by the directorship, and there were frequent meetings to keep this all on track. It worked quite well, actually, very well. Yeah.
The speculation about the ILC, I think I can see why, because the history and design, the thing with love and design was at the core. That was the driver to make a decision. That means that. Do you think that if in a case thing like the wild ones in which you might want,
I'm not sure I completely understand your question.
In our case, let's say,
in this case,
initial detectors,
there were different concepts from the beginning.
But
so there was.
One,
well, at the end, we were forced. It was sort of, well, of course, there was, each region had their own vision of what to realize, and if it was within the budgets of the countries, there probably would have been more than one project. There were different ideas, different technologies, different upgrade possibilities, different regional motivations and whatnot. So those were completely different technologies, and as I say, when the decision came down in 2004 that the world should coalesce around one concept, it was very difficult for those who were working on the competing concept to accept that. But it was realized by the community that if we want to realize this eventually, we, and of course we didn't think it would be this long, we have to all get together and work on together on a single approach. And this we call it the Wiseman, this panel that made the decision on what, it was all men, so it's appropriate to call it the Wiseman. They made the recommendation on what technology we should use. It was very hard for the people who lost out in that competition, you might say it was a competition, to accept. But quickly, people, you know, went home, slept on it, and realized we have to get together. I'm not making any predictions about what happens here. I'm trying to just say what happened on the ILC side. Let you take whatever you want and discard whatever you want.
So I want to follow up on that. Because I think there are some good lessons here, but I think there's also some fundamental differences, and I'm trying to encapsulate this with a statement, which is a little bit left in the cavalier. But, you know, the gravitational wave community of micros compared to the high energy physics community, you're in your fourth or fifth big generation, right? This is at least an order of magnitude, probably more than that, bigger than what we would be doing globally. So I think that I think you asked the right question, but I do want to sort of come back to it and say, what do we take away from this? I think one of the things that I take away from this is a lot of the complexity of the decisions that had to be made come about because of the scale of the project, because of the built-in international nature of the project. And I think the discussion that we want to have in this group and going forward, and we can have it quickly, is whether or not the ILC, which is a pretty robust industrialized top-down structure and process, and developed and worked, and we said it was painful because we had to give up there and cherish designs to be able to do it. If that's what we need in this community, I'm not 100% convinced yet. I mean, one way you could say it is it would be great if you had three identical detectors that were 40 millimeters long. Particularly places, China, the United States, and Europe, or maybe one of them should be in the West, Australia, or something like that. I think what we need is to be able to sort of say, what if the governments have a big role in this? And you pointed that out, Japan is a major role playing in ILC now because they're the host country. And I think the three, whatever host countries decide to do, put in stakes for what we want to do with 3G, I think they'll have some things to say here. So I guess I would summarize my long-winded sort of speech here by saying that I think we can take something away from this, but because of the scale of it, I don't think we have to impose.
I don't agree. When you start multiplying by 3 or 4, you're up there.
Three is 2 to 6 billion, right? But this bit, that's, by my calculation, this is $20 billion.
Right? Yeah, okay, so that.
It's $20 billion, and I think that's probably not.
I think the issues you raised, Dave, are ones that motivate, at least in my mind, this NRC study. That is, here's the science opportunity. How do we want to, what ends and the number of detectors, what should they be the same? Should they be given, do we take the routine design for one of them, do we take it for all of them? This is a motivation for that. That's not to say the community doesn't have to do a lot of work.
I don't think we ask them what's best. I think we say this is what we think is best. Maybe give them an option to let them decide, let them weigh in on that too. We don't want the NRC studies on the best response, right?
No, but they should evaluate even, what science do you use if you do only one of those?
We call it
A quick comment on that. The level of funding that IELTS has, it has a very complicated international collaboration. Like that one is much smaller. It's actually we don't need the level, but it's very complex. We will solve it. So we are working on it. And in a sense, it's like half $450 million. That is the only way they found to make it work.
So I was basically upset, just what the MSF has a number of projects in the years that are more along the lines of the scale we're talking about in the ILC. And there's Gemini, there's Alma, there's the National Radio Astronomy Reserve, there's NOAA, there's Pierre Auger, and there's a long list. So there's a very long experience that MSF about how to do these things. You know, they all have some of the same common features, which I think are the ones which I mentioned a lot.
Keith's petition.
Yeah, so Tim gave a nice summary of how things involved by ILC, and I agree with all of Tim's recommendations, but I did want to mention this panel voice here. Recommended that we make sure the rest of the scientific community embraces our project. But one issue that ILC faced is that not all of the scientific community embraces it. And you and I share an enthusiasm for the ILC and what it can do. But I know plenty of scientific physicists who do not. And although there are panels that say, yes, we endorse this as the next machine, they don't always endorse it with the enthusiasm or the urgency that I think we could bring up in our own community. I think we don't face an obstacle the ILC face, which is the lack of anonymity within hydrogen community. But there's a significant element of dissent of people who say the ILC is premature, it's not high enough energy, we need to wait to see what happens in the ILC. But we don't have that problem. So I think that's one advantage for those.
Matt, that's good.
I guess this point is made, but I just wanted to say that as a difference, what we're trying to do in ISC necessarily have multiple facilities. They will necessarily be different places that can drive different design choices. But also, they'll be built at different times, most likely. And this will be a good technology to be built. So, I don't see us converging on a single coherent, single identity design. I do see us collaborating, swapping the technology and using designs. And of course, the science needs to be able to all agree on the. But I suspect that to some degree the design would be driven by the time and place in which they are.
And thanks, I enjoyed the talk. I would like to point out one big difference between what we are talking about with Project Nation and what I've seen here. And I can see that on your technology choices, when you go to supercomputing, you have 3 years of excellence. These are extremely important choices, and they also are a big part of the risk and a big part of the cost. But if you look at the decomposition of all of the cost implementation, then what we need are essentially long tools, the backing system, and the ones that are caverns. And then the cost and really complicated things, like you have to make the technology choices, is actually a small fraction of that. So if you can learn from these projects in order to get a viable and calculated cost of improvements on the hydro system, then you already de-risk the defense to require an advanced development. So the things that we need to settle then are just what is the topology? Is it an L, is it a triangle, what does it end, and things like that. So,
very much along the spirit of what Keith was saying, did you actually try and recruit people from a broader community so that people will stand behind you, or because that's not an issue at all?
So certainly there was outreach to the higher physics community, and there's been outreach beyond that, of course, to try to deal with the recommendation there of advocating for the science of this. I would have to say, I agree with Keith that there's always an element that within the high energy physics community, there's a very large community with lots of diverse interests and concerns for what the impact of funding is going to be. on different concepts. And so there are people who doubt the wisdom of going for an ILC. It's, I don't know, I think of it a little bit as a knee jerk because sometimes it doesn't look at the details of what the scientific merit and detail really is. But certainly the effort was made to inform the broader high energy community on the value of the ILC, and the committees that really studied these things, you know, and looked at all the different issues and thought about them in a very serious way, all came down positively towards the ILC. So there was, I would say there was no naysayers within the committee. The one issue that probably is the hardest thing to deal with is the cost. And the cost is 8 billion elkus, roughly, with the additional 1 or 2 billion of manpower needs. But that's the cost in the international terms. It's under $10 billion. And that's a lot of money. And so that's an issue that, you know, people wonder, what could you do better with that money? Now, of course, when the SSC was on the blocks, everyone, we heard a lot of people in other scientific communities saying that we just kill that SSC, we can do so much great science. But in the end, that money all went off into water projects and whatnot. So, you know, it's a problem.
Yeah, I just wanted to answer Matt's comment. I mean, what he described sounds like a likely way to go, but it's very undesirable to have, you know, no commonality of design, no uniform construction schedule. Is that necessary? Shouldn't we aspire to something more uniform and more unified along the lines of the ILC model, obviously with different sites, but with a coordination and a common design and common schedule? And it seems like that would be,
of course, I didn't suggest no commonality design. I just said we shouldn't be constrained to require common design.
Yeah, I think my emphasis is more to aspire to something that's what we envision to be the best science possible. We may shut down.
Let me put a finer point on it. It might be that science actually drives us to build fewer detectors. We were not constrained to build identical detectors. We might find that actually best thing you can do is have one triangular site as well. That might be
as a global design for that one.
So we shouldn't constrain ourselves identity size from the outcome.
I think my key point is that I think it would be good if we decided to do that, if we decided to do it in much the same way as L1 and H1 are the same detector, but these components of the same detector in the future.
I think it's good that we should have a single design, a single product, and we need a single method. And if we think network, this is a data, it's a single episode. So let's suppose that we end up with a design that is like Hugo, but it's a costly that can be a supporting US. What we need, what we do with a single L shape of the day. You don't recognize the validations, users, properly. It's not the observer, it's a detector. It doesn't track the domain of the day, it's an observer. So what we need is to leave in mind the idea of the network and then realize different components of the network according to the constraints that exist in different countries. So it would be quite difficult in Europe to find a place to realize a 40-kilometer L-shaped network. And then we are probably forced to live in different countries. But this should be a component of the network. And then it means that at the same level, or some level, we need to have a common definition of what we need. And the technologies, I mean, the technology with the AI and web rights, I don't think that we will implement that part of the technology on one side of the country. It would be quite soon.
Well, I think we've begun with some of the questions that I've put out to discussion. So thank you. Thank you, Jim.
I don't think that another gap building it is usually that close, 30, 40 kilometers on the ground, on us, whatever. Anybody survey the post experiment with this for infrastructure or consider these as normal site again and to be disposed of the usage? I mean, you can use it for a train tunnel after we finish the experiment.
Somebody wants to make a train tunnel.
So, the first slide I have, we've started on this. What are the next steps if we really want to have an international effort in the spirit of what we heard from Jim to come up with? It may not end up with a single design for the interferometer, but the kinds of questions that Matt suggested coming up with what makes sense of the network. What's the next step for us to engender that kind of international effort in the context of funding agencies? We have this GWAC or GWAC that was formed by the NSF's initiative that actually has representatives from the major funding countries that from the countries that have major interests in this kind of infrastructure. And we also have GWIC, and she'll be discussing some of these things at the meeting on Sunday that GWIC will have in New York right before GR21. But what are the steps that we want to take coming out of this meeting that actually launches such an international effort to come up with a coherent plan that addresses aspirations for everybody in the field?
Yes, I have a couple of concrete suggestions. One is that I think we recommend, I think it has a very a small group to develop a common science case for certain investors. And this would be for a worldwide network of investors. But focusing on the science rather than the technology, perhaps on the number, perhaps the location, but not on the technology, but on the science. So that's something that should not take 8 years, I hope. But I think also that should be, or the first part, I think we should restrict ourselves to the US and Europe. I think those are probably the most important funding groups that will be involved in this. But we should think globally, more globally. I mean, certainly, Australia, other countries have been involved lately. There will be more countries now interested after detection. There is experience in high energy and astronomy about international collaborations that have measured and minor partners. So we should explore those possibilities, and those certainly should be part of what I hope are WAC discussions.
And of course, we don't want to forget China.
And China, of course, and Russia.
Yes, just about that, I just talked to Sheila about the meeting that he is going to have. I will be presenting the same slides in one of the sessions, and I will make an invitation to me for our next WAC meeting. So the idea is that in October, maybe September, I'm going to call another WAC meeting, and I'm going to invite a representative from WIC to make a presentation to WAC about what are the things that we can work. I want to say that so many times, so it's not going to be fun anymore. we'll start before the community to decide what is that they want to tell the funding agencies and the what.
I forgot one. I do think that in the US, Ray's proposal of pushing for an NRC study that looks at the science case at the very least, perhaps more than just science case for a third generation network, as well as priorities in the other wavelengths of gravitational waves. It's very important, and that should be done also. We should push for that this year at the same time we are developing the science case to be presented to you.
Thank you.
So yeah, just a comment on what you said before. I think that if you are your comment talking about the some committee set up by the defender where it was not the consensus, it was for the coordination. And the fact that then we discussed that we include the subject to increase the our competences and skills. And this is the reason why I showed the slides before, where the SAC committee play a role that is not the science case, but there are other guys that are doing the science case. But it's a combination of the interface with the track with the community and with the team, if you want, that will take care of the study. I think that the SAC committee has not the role of the prepare the science case in the future.
I think what Mathilde said is correct. The current subcommittee that was put together did not have the science piece of the role, but I would like our upcoming meeting to discuss the question of putting together a science piece. And I think we're partly the right place to do that, because I think it's very important that we look across the whole field when we think about science pieces, including LISA, because I think whatever piece we put together for the boundary side has to very carefully look not just at LISA, but in the future of electromagnetic facilities that are coming along, and make absolutely clear the case for future third generation boundary detectors in that broad context. And so that needs not just us inside the boundary community thinking just about that. It needs a broader perspective to make sure that it's a correct and credible case that really shows where you sit in that broader.
The question is also intermediate band. 10 hertz to 0.5 hertz or something. And I think, although there's a good case for going another order of magnitude in the audio frequencies, if some of our, you know, in the next few years, if you find out that there's a good case to go to the 1 hertz, at this kind of cost level, it no longer makes sense to do this on the ground. And instead of having a short version of LISA in space is competitive, you know, just said Michelson in a problem in space, is competitive with the advanced LIGO sensitivity at about 20 hertz. And so it's, you always do better on the ground, probably in the audio band, but below the low end of the audio band, you always do better with a roughly $1 billion space machine. And that kind of thing would extend, you know, it would fill in the gap and go down to 10 millihertz or 100 millihertz, so it would be like a cheaper version of the cycle machine. But at the moment, of course, you know, LISA is aimed at low frequencies for a good reason, because people have a good feeling that there are very high SNR sources and lots of them. And you can have very good angular resolution, and you have to use the audio band sources. And there's some sort of belief that there is a desert in the middle, which is why there's not, you know, 1 hertz space detector is not the main thing. But if this is not the case, or we think that we want to catch the early part of all of the precursors to all of the audio bands, you know, the cheapest alternative, although it's unfortunate to have to go to space, the cheapest alternative might be in space.
Maybe I'll look at the
Yes, Fran, I do not forget that the exclusion lasts a few years. Ground wave detector meant to last 20 years and now it was not available. So it's different. Cost is not the only.
It should be that cost, but we have to
get a shot.
So, given the timeline that you showed us, we get it, is there any way that you see that we can somehow start to merge a US 3G option into the things we're revisiting that we study?
Yep. I think so. The for sure, the first part, besides Gazan, is really the common sense basis. But you know, that make a different sound just less acute. But as I said before, it's a single detector because a single cell is made by different models. And so I think it would be very useful. Technology, as I said before, at the end there will be nothing. So silicon detectors, this Voyager, AT, here I'm left open the door to the Sapphire because Sapphire is a very huge investment in Japan. That's a point that we need to discuss with technology and see. So also the as I said before, the design of the T was strongly affected by the fact that we were alone. Now we are no more alone. So maybe the triangle is not anymore necessary to have all the polarization because we are in constant polarization using the different detectors. So I think it's fundamental.
I want to put Matt and others who are working with him on the spot. And there's the beginning, so I mean, I can see papers being written. I would like just from you, and maybe just to give us some vision for, let's not worry about making international flight time. That has to happen, it's done. But I am interested what it would take, what you think it would take to do what I think is the minimum that we need for the NRC study, which is to get together a compendious paper that takes the breakpoints, you don't have to take the ones I did, the comedy breakpoints, and you say, what are the steps in the technology? Just, that's not the thing that drives it. You look for science that we now know and we can come from, and what are the steps in the technology? And you give you some ingredients which we don't have. For example, we have a paper that you guys have written about the fact that you can look with different states of the instrument over all the whole universe of black holes. Okay, you can learn lots of inferences from that. For example, a thing that has not been done, and I find very critical that has to be done, is to really find out, is there a case to be made for cosmology on the business of the cartography, getting the metric cut? I mean, I would love to be able to, and it's going to be critical, that this is a large, going from a small scale to a larger scale instrument. You have to make the case where you fit in with the other things that are going on in electromagnetic astronomy, which has a very big future going on. People ask me, well, can you do a measurement to 1%? No, obviously, I don't know if you can. But can you at least get to 10% on age and on W? No, those are the questions here, and I will get to them. And what I'm really interested in, now, these are not new to any of you guys. I'm interested in what are the resources that you guys need to do that. And what time do you think it will take if you got those resources? Okay, that's what I'm interested in. I mean, that's the only reality I can do. Yeah.
I think we want to explain cosmology. Not because as far as cosmology is concerned, we can measure not just H. H will be done within 5% over the next 5 years in the nearby universe. But that's not that's of more interest to most of the cosmologists. What is it? Use just the most important. Electromagnetic waves and gravitational waves travel in the universe in different ways and different systems. And therefore, using that to measure the geometry, the topology, and the dynamics of the universe is important. So, what do we mean by dynamics? It's really W. That's what finally what it comes to. I think with something like Cosmic Explorer, although we haven't done specifically for Cosmic Explorer, based on the ET run state, we can tell you, we can measure the dark matter and dark energy densities. Even the Hubble thing made of cosmological aeronautic observations, they have good enough interesting precision. And there are other five precision. The binary neutron stars are in plenty, by that I mean thousands per year by the binaries. Then we can actually measure not only W, but its radiation potential to the level of humus. And that's really the target of most of the electromagnetic observations. We are not going to be there in the same time scale as the electromagnetic observations, but it is a complementary universe which has completely different technologies.
That's the issue. The systematic is different. They appreciate that. That's the only thing they appreciate.
the answers are more or less already known, but it's going to be.
I think we can put it in those arguments.
I thought they were there, but that's.
But I think it's
going to have a practical answer.
Other questions we can ask you is do this.
I think so, I'm going to give you this also.
Yeah.
Yeah, I said, I'm going to go to the station.
How long has it taken? You've done some.
I don't know, maybe.
Wait, no, I was just, yeah, how, because I was asking, like, you say, you have to counter that this for PNS is very. In the context of Gangsta status, well, there's whether by after commencing their daughters, where they, I mean, he didn't look that positive. It was all of 7% for the W's, the parameter and for H is what he said. So maybe that.
I, there is a paper by Walter Delposer, sorry, not Walter, Chris Van den Broek, Ben Sauer, and Deepak Kastner. Okay, this was already during the Einstein design principle study. We not only were able to measure W, but variation of W with Z. And that used binary neutrons fast.
Yeah, that's that one too.
Okay, that's the problem. No, but look, I mean, as a very practical matter that I'm interested in, is it realistic? That's the question. Is it realistic to think that one could have an NRC study by the end of 2018 with a good science case put together?
2018, yes.
2018. I'm not sure in the territory.
That's the reason why I would ask you. What do you need?
I'm asking whether that's possible.
So right, there is a lot in the territorial status. Like I said, you know, there many of the things we want to do, there is something, okay? It might need to be revised. We use a Cosmic Explorer on this side, you know, together with the ISAT telescope rather than or it may be revised to crank up the mass of the black hole, because people obviously a year ago had in mind the 10 solar masses black hole. Now we know that maybe 30 solar masses black hole or even higher. So there are tweaks to be done here and there, but we're not starting from zero.
Right, I think that's the plan we need, I have to tell you that. I'd like to leave this place with a plan.
So I don't think we'll have this done today or tomorrow, but I hope that by October we'll have a reasonable cut at what are the important points of the science space, what are the big questions, the big items that we really want to do with the cognitive margins inside the universe. Roughly, what are the technical layout, and at least an idea of how much it will cost us to get a good cost. And I imagine these are the ingredients for a proposal for a conceptual design study. So I think that needs to be done sometime in the next few months. But those are the, you know, the laying the groundwork for doing then a very serious science case study, which will probably be a couple of years. I imagine this will go in a very similar way to the team. Right. We will not end up, we won't end up with the same, but we will change in the years to one. But we will end up with kind of a serious design study, which then is looking at the global network, not just a single competitor. Again, this year is gone by. You guys think that involved. Where we should think about right now the network of detectors as the detector observatory. And what are we going to do with this network? And that's, you know, a lot of it's already out there. It's obviously a lot of it's out there. There are things which we know and others have been working on in terms of what can you do with a network. Let's look at what are the optimal places to put them, what kind of shapes do you want, what designs do you want. And there are some open questions. Probably it's, you know, a year to develop that reasonably well. But I think we will have a first cut at the big points in some of the month. We can actually write them in the document, we can argue about it. And then another year, but 2018, we should have something like that. And the scale of the NRC study will be more, I think we can do some things. I don't think that's crazy.
What else do you need?
Yeah, it's a good question. Like, we're already sort of, as of starting in February, I think it's like this whole problem was recognized very clearly in the symposium, and the interest and excitement have been growing since then. And at this point, we're at the level of the mailing list, we have info. I mean, things are growing, but it's not there yet. I think the interest is growing very rapidly. So we're getting more people, but at some point, we need to actually get people to do it. And that's when you're required to need to do it. So.
Yeah, so, Ray, I think the answer. I think the answer to the question is yes, it could be done, but I think it becomes
like anything in the game play from like priorities, because a lot of people are working on other things too. That's the challenge. And so, you know, a question I would ask is who? And so I know Matt's involved in this. Stefano is involved in this. Not that I know. Danielle is involved in it. Who else is involved in
it? Sandra, Steve Farrakers, Stefano, Matt. A lot of people are in it. The group is growing fairly quickly.
Okay, all right.
But at the AEW, we're getting 10 people.
Okay.
Interested and involved in this. And I expect that to grow. But at some point, I think they also need to be paying people's salary. And fair and not large. I don't know if people need to be doing this full time.
Priority.
So I know that I have.
And certainly in a laboratory, that's a possibility, because people are working in a laboratory can redirect some of their efforts. That's a priority decision. But for other institutions in the community, so Pedro, may I want to?
Yeah, remember that it's a great idea to do the glucose estimates in the report that comes out of it. So if you were to try to do a calculation of how much you cost the design study, then put it there, that would be very helpful for me to plan.
Is this a good time to ask a question? I'm sorry, I cannot. I cannot.
There's a question.
There's a question.
Hi, this is Suresh. I'm speaking from AEI. My question basically pertains to three of the bullet points in Albert's presentation, which is a global R&D network, needed technologies, and timing. Today we have several prototype interferometers and like the 40 meter at Caltech, we have the GL600, we have several 10 meter prototypes, we have prototype coming up in India. So we have many small facilities where we can pursue technology that we wish to develop for the future detectors. So how do we then put all these efforts together? And I suppose the plan is to then inform the proposals that come up for the 3G interferometers from the research that is conducted at these various facilities. In that case, when exactly are the results from these required? Because they have to inform the proposals and proposal timing, and the timing of the research in these facilities have to coordinate. So my question was, how much time do we have?
I can translate it exactly. Suresh is asking, we have a bunch of prototypes in the world, and how soon do they have to produce results for Cosmic Explorer?
Sooner, for the beyond A plus, between A plus and Cosmic Explorer, I suppose.
Never.
I think for the purposes of the discussion we had just now, it's certainly not needed for the science case. It will be informative later. The science case might inform what is actually required before making technical disaster. We would not know. Before other people answer here, let me ask my question, which I think is still related to the previous one. I think we're all agreeing that there is the science case that's needed for a third generation network, not just for generation detectors, but the network, and that there are ways that we can ask for funding and people to do this, and the time scale is about a year, so we can use that for an NRC study, to base an NRC study. Now, in another year or a year and a half, the request of white papers for the CADEN, the 2020 CADEN, will come. So I think we will have to also think part of it about how to use this in the broader context so that we make sure it doesn't compete with LISA or other projects. That's that would be a delicate question. That would be something in which we certainly will need the broader community, not just these communities. And we want everything, we want space, we want ground, but the broader community experts. So again, the NRC fund that will be critical in that.
I thought that one outcome of the original bond workshop was because the 3G facilities are not really, you know, maybe beyond the table scope, and because of where we are in readiness, that the white papers that go into the 2020 the fatal survey did not ask for anything, it would just offer opportunities of science. So the science case is very important. We don't need the cost case, but we won't be asking for anything, that was my understanding.
Yeah.
But this would indirectly help me so, because it would give further excitement about the field. So I think focusing what people find opportunity is the way that you should actually.
And should that have some lines on this?
Yeah.
I have a question, maybe for Ray. You said you think it's a bad idea to get to know about the next survey.
Be careful what I mean then. When you're asking what I meant by that, you shouldn't get mixed up in their prior decisions. Okay, but clearly mixed up in the science. And I think we've got to play a role in that, because now you see papers now coming out where you have research seeing sources before we do, and then we see the end result. And for example, that allows some of these tests of general activities go better. And that would be very important. You don't want to give that up. So you know, any kind of synergies that you can get between that spectrum, that part of the spectrum, to the spectrum that we do, is very important. I think also the fact that people, if they read the NRC study and they see that we've left out three quarters of the frequency space in some crazy logarithmic way, we have to say something about CNG. We have to say something about all of the disciplines that are there. That would be crazy if we didn't. But something, like a real concentration of the NRC study, because it's not going to be anywhere else, is going to be on the ground based future as well. That's the fundamental reason. The thing I don't want is the ground based to get prior to us, vis-a-vis all the other things that are going on this morning. That would be a disaster. I don't know. I mean, anybody who please argue that point with me here. I'm so convinced of it.
I wonder to what degree can they put surface into consideration.
I don't know if they will. That may depend on the funding. But you make a point that this NRC study that we're going to launch is going to touch on disciplines that are outside of what we're doing. So presumably they're going to be happy to be touched upon. We're going to invite them into this. How's that going to work?
Is going to touch on what the CMB folks are doing. I can see that not working also.
Well, I mean, look at the assessment study, and that's why I brought that up. I mean, maybe we were in a much more primitive state in those days, and we were basically those people were not competing for the money. That may be right. I sort of tend to trust if you get the right scientists, they look in a more global way. Instead, I'm not hoping you can do that. I mean, I don't know how to solve that problem. I mean, that'd be internal competition.
Yeah.
So I agree with Ray, but I'll go through it further. I think part of the credibility of the NRC study that we're envisioning will come from us having a broader array of scientists than the people. And also international members.
Yeah. But let me ask you a question. Look, one of the tricky things is this. I mean, I know there's a certain reticence in the NSF at the moment to pay for something like this. It's not that there's anybody really against it. At least that's my understanding. But
But there are these things cost of the order of between half a million and $2 million.
Maybe what, say that?
No, it's probably, let's say round numbers, half a million, but I think that's a few more. So consequently, there are other sources which can help, but it's got to come from both NASA and the agencies that are administering this science program have to agree. I mean, Bob, I completely agree with you. I can't go and hire myself a bunch of very good friends of mine to run this committee and then tell the agencies what to do. That's crazy. No, but I mean, but if the problem is a hang up of that there isn't enough money, which I can see because Congress is not appropriating enough, then I can see that maybe we could get the Calvary Foundation, we might get the Simon Foundation to put a little bit of money into justice study. That's all I'm saying. That's not crazy.
Bob made the comment earlier, though, that they're not required, right?
Well, that's my understanding. I mean, the National Academy was founded and set up by Congress to adopt the
Yeah. And
so they look to their agencies to report to the Academy to comment on the important scientific issues, which would be one of them. But I think that has to come through the NASA and NASA.
So let me make one further comment. I was actually part of the Hale study for grad, the only one that ever existed.
What was
it about? Thousand chaired by Jim Hyde
from Harvard.
And Lido was very controversial. That was paid for by NSF, NASA, and DOE. Now, they had no interest in gravity before or since, but they were interested enough in it to put some money in. So, not be out of the question to ask again.
You could, but it would probably have to be.
And then, this issue came for the study came up at the first round workshop. And Mike Turner was on the phone.
I wasn't there.
Okay. He was on the phone with the comment that maybe he was completely wrong, that we should advocate for this independent fund and NSF should figure out how to pay for it. If they're going to put $1 billion into something, they need a good assessment of whether it's the direction they ought to be heading in. So there shouldn't be a responsibility for that in the book, and you know, that's not going to be the
science. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just to amplify what you're saying, I can't see how the NSF can go ahead and adopt the science without that.
Got Mr. Peter from the lady over here.
That may be so once more. I think I agree that we are planning. We should keep that plan of having white papers and dedicated surveys that say how good the observation network is going to be for the space science with this stuff. But we need to sell that. It's not just writing it. If we have, if we plan for success, and we have in a couple of years, 2 or 3 years before the decade, an NRC study that says that the $1 billion investment, international $1 billion investment in ground gravitational waves is good, that might affect the thinking about the investment of another $1 billion or $2 billion in space. So we need to begin now, while we are developing this study, to make sure that everybody understands that it's not the case. And it's not as easy as it sounds. I mean, when we are talking about $1 billion, we have to explain, we have to explain this is in the international context, so it's not US. Here we're talking about the NRC and the dedicated, all in the US, they're thinking about all in the US. So when we talk about these numbers, we have to make sure that these are not US numbers, these are international networks, these are international efforts. So that's a selling pitch we need to do now as we develop this continuation concept.
So on the question of Nick Dale, Ray, I would never argue against that. That's what we are. We do not want to do rounds. We're not ready to do rounds. in the next decade, but I also think we're not asking for something very big in the next decade. A plus will come before the next decade, at least in terms of funding. Voyager might come in, but I don't know that rises to the scale of the Decadal. I think the one place where the Decadal could be very useful for us is the transient astronomy community. We now know that there are 75 astronomer groups that want to chase our triggers. And transient astronomy is a small but growing area in the astronomy portfolio. So I think that's a place where we can really get a lot of advocacy. There are some very powerful, heavy-hitting astronomers that are involved in chasing our triggers. That's one place. The other thing, I'm asking myself how the Decadal study, and even if we contribute something there, I think we should, along these lines, and the NRC study in play. If you start an NRC study in 2018, I mean, these things are time-consuming. They take a year, people are involved, and basically drop half of their life for a year to really dig into the study, interview people, ask questions, develop a report. So that if you start in 2017 or 2018, I think you have a year and a half. So it comes out about the same time the Decadal survey comes out. So it's not clear to me that there's how they interplay. You know, if you could use one to sort of influence the other, I'm not sure that can be done, just given the time parts of it. But I think a decade old survey is important. Bob raised an interesting point about money, cost of funding things. And to do new studies, operations money can't be used for that. So faculty who get paid. Institutions can be working on it, but if you put LIGO Lab people on it, you would have to find separate funding streams for that because then you'd be running the audit.
No, that's where the top.
That's where we could really use the money right there.
Okay. That's an interesting point.
So, as everybody knows, that over the last decade or maybe 20 years, the Department of Energy portfolio of high energy physics has changed dramatically. Now, all of a sudden, you realize that there's a lot of time to do that. It's not also dark energy, which is dark matter. Maybe it might be too gravity.
There are two studies we're talking about. One is a study that prepares the NRC, which is done by us, Jimmy Coates. And I feel that should not be just the gravitational wave community, but it would be very helpful to bring in other communities who can benefit. For instance, nuclear physics. You mentioned DOE, and I think they may genuinely be interested if we have a strong case. Before we invite anyone from that community to participate in the study, they have to have absolutely solid ground that we have to have. If it is, then I think it would be very effective. So we should really be lobbying not just one community, but fundamental physics, both neutron star equation state, interesting gear, cosmology, obviously, we're interested in that, and astrophysics. So how about our study actually prices of a mix of gravitational physics and other people, so that we have an endorsement of what we have done, and not just a self-indulgence, but as a problem. That's something that's useful before the NRC actually takes it all.
No, I have no objection. I'm not going to run this thing. But the other hand, the question I have is how do you make an efficient study? We'd love to have more people with ideas, but don't make a power paper. And I don't know how to avoid
that from the beginning. They failed the first time with MT because it was too broad.
Well, I don't want to argue against
that. No, we didn't do. That was not the motivation in the case of ET. We didn't try that much. Okay, but we had a second grant where we were trying to make a bigger one, but that failed. We didn't have detection. Now everything is different.
That may be right. Maybe that's the argument to bring in people who happen to be good and interesting. I don't know. Look, that's something you have to look in detail at when you begin to try to organize the people who are doing it. I can't recommend one way or the other. I mean, I know what you're saying. It's a good idea, but how are you going to make that thing that's impossible?
You should not. That's why you should make sure that you're not stupid.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's just me, but I seem to have lost a little bit of the thread of the conversation in terms of what we actually want to bring as the topic for NRC study. Is it that we want to get a recommendation on a proposed roadmap that takes us to the future and advanced facilities, new facilities? Do we want to only ask about new facilities where, you know, I'm getting very confused with 3G because we're talking new generations facilities and current facilities, and we're talking about new facilities, data computers, which is fire and drill out or something. But what is it that we want in a simple declarative statement to the mission to the NRC? Roadmap, is it a particular facilities, a particular generation?
Let me give my best answer to that. When I have discussed this with people on the board for physics and astronomy, for example, I say, look, this is a new field. And the thing is that this is an open field. And I want to explore with a committee of people who are in other areas what this field can bring to science. I think that's the most important topic. You want to give examples of how you might achieve those new discoveries that you're talking about. So you have to talk about a little bit about that. There's no way of avoiding the technology, at least to show here are ideas that will get you there. But I think the fundamental thread is here are the bunch of scientific issues that we have now opened up. Many people don't know them. Here it is, but when we open this field, what are the things that we can expect to come out of it? What do we know? Are there things we won't know? And that is the major thing you bring to the NRC study. And to open the idea, here are new things that are going to happen. And in the process, you'll find out their branch points. For example, the big facility will happen when you begin. That's why I tried to give you the example of the black holes. There are wonderful questions that are going to come out of that, which you cannot do in the four corners.
So it's a roadmap.
It's a roadmap, right. And then you want them to see that they're the vanish point. Okay? Yeah.
And in some sense, let them discover that you can go to the
well, they have people help them.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I mean, you said basically what I was going to say. It should be the full, you know, the full promise and exploitation of this field of gravitational wave science. So it shouldn't be written around that particular new facility that should along there. And especially if we're involving all of the whole frequency spectrum. I mean, it needs to not presume that we're focusing on ground-based science. And we have to get the other the members of the leaders of the other community behind this idea too, to go into this.
You want to switch topic to this one? The one that you have? I'm sure you might have been wandering through all the slides I had in the
yeah, but the ones that you talked about, the number of 3D detectors.
Sorry?
Yeah, that one. No, the previous one. You have a number of.
I did. So we've already touched on that, I think. Did you have a comment?
Did you?
No, I think we touched on this. The point is that there's room for designs that are constrained by natural constraints, but we want to talk about the method.
Yeah. The initial hope was that a heterogeneous combination of advanced detectors and things beyond that, 3G observatories, will help us constrain position of the sky well enough that we don't need. It looks like that's not the case. If a detector is a factor 2 to 4 less sensitive, then it really doesn't contribute that much. Maybe 4 options. So, it depends whether you have an existing global network of advanced blast detectors, which will contribute even at the time of the 3G observatories. Then I think two observatories may be enough, but this study is not yet done. But it may be, it may require really a global network of regional experts. That's really a road to go, but that study, so this study that Ray is talking about should incorporate this aspect as well.
You're not in sure what you.
And of course, in Ray's presentation, he pointed out that astronomers got into trouble because they have too many facilities, or there's too many facilities. Mm-hmm. I can imagine people be asking if we had a decision before we have money now, if you know that it's kind of
the science should answer that question.
The science,
yeah.
But I thought I had the same feeling. We probably need more than one reaching detector to get position on the BBC and stuff as far as the rails. But then the reverse question comes up, do you really need a dense detector at the same time? Because it's different than telescope. Telescopes look at certain spaces in the sky. And you can always look at different pieces of sky to see something different because the big telescope can see it. But we see almost the entire sky. So what point does it have to run a detector that's 10 times or 3 times per century? Then maybe you just see less.
Exactly. And that is one of the very compelling reasons why we should have a global network that covers the entire sky and does the localization.
I gave you more than that. Just to add that besides calibration, obviously there are reasons why we want several detectors and Michelin. One which is measuring extra calibration, which is on this LGR, and what was mentioned yesterday that this. That these objects will be very far away, so if you want their intrinsic masses, we need to know the idea of the ratio of the distance in our case, and they're not. That again points out more than one. Other? Okay, I will entertain you with some discussion.
I think Leo.
No, it's okay. I guess that's true, but if we had the small detectors, we could have the high frequency as well.
I wanted to say something, but it's not related to the digital control. So, unless you, if you have more comments on that, then I'll pass the microphone.
No, I didn't still. One thing that is not very clear to me if you put your science goal, say, for the PG, and then for the ET, you made a design study, and the idea was that you would observe. So, is there any hope? So, should we go further? Because I know you're talking about 50. What is the additional gain that you get from the
20? The answer to this question is sort of always the same. You're looking at what science you're trying to do. And of course, having a horizon at a redshift of 100 is probably not more useful than a horizon at a redshift of 20, but having an SNR of 100 would be much more useful than a SNR. So, to any one of these questions, you have to look at exactly what is the science we're going to do, what question we're trying to answer. From that, you can evaluate what is the use of having three detectors. Do you need to have one in the US, one in Australia, one in Europe, possibly applying all these? Each science objective you can evaluate to be very clear the impact of the metal choice. But without those details, it's really difficult to do it. So, obviously, unless you're looking at the primordial black hole, it's really crazy. But I think the science is really high in technology, which is hard to do a class. And then for each design of choice, I think that's an impact on the science. So, anyhow, I think that you have to really get into the details.
I think
there's
one answer, and that's really. How serious you want to look at the cosmological background. Because if you choose the cosmological background, you not think that there's a foreground of black hole. In order to subtract them, you probably would have to take them all. You cannot ask up to the threshold. So you would just really have to have see far enough that you see them all and not single them all in the threshold.
Now, if you dominate the cost, then your answers to the medical subject.
Even to that, and I know the person who's doing that study right now in this detail that is popular is the question, can we subtract the foreground of the black holes and change your look
problems that's a background or not, and how it's becoming that much less. And it's exactly the same thing. Many centers are very different from how many patterns, and you have to do this as a path that is happening. That's what's going to happen.
Please give the mic.
I'd like to return to the issue of some sky localization with region detectors. There is a distinction between EM follow-up and looking for EM counterparts. So accurate sky localization with 3G detectors would help with getting redshifts of host galaxies. But I think it's unlikely that the binary neutron star mergers that will detect with at our detection threshold with 3G detectors will probably be far enough away that we won't be finding like our process signatures in connection with them. So I think that by that point I think it's likely that we'll have started to see neutron star binaries before we get to that point. And we'll either have a good idea of what their electromagnetic counterparts look like by then, and therefore we'll have better ways to find them than using gravitational wave detectors to trigger the observations, or you won't have found them at all. I just wanted to caution that against building the science case for a network of 3G detectors based on looking for EM.
No, it's not for EM counterparts. It's really not for EM counterparts. It's polarization. To break the regional space, to get the redshift and do the cosmonaut.
Okay.
Okay.
Sure, and then we're going to break the lunch and we have time afterwards to wrap up.
At least not for the very bottom of the lunch. That's pretty good.
So I mean, just a comment, which actually I think cycles back to things that Gabby was saying back at the beginning. So understanding we're going to where we are and what the purpose of the meeting, we talked about a lot about NRC study and the science cases that we need to be used here. I think especially in what we've been discussing and potentially having broader membership, appropriate membership and that was trying to do international membership. I think it is important to remember in all these discussions that the case will have to be clear as a global one as to how, if it's an NRC study for something in the US, how that sits in the global picture. So I think it is important to remember the other route mapping exercises that also go on. So in Europe, for instance, there's an update to the astroparticle physics route map of ongoing at the moment, in which gravitational waves are included. Something will happen there later in the fall. We've got a meeting in Paris about that. Things are moving in Australia again. I think that's an interesting situation there in terms of gravitational wave research. So when we're thinking about these discussions, I think it's important to make sure that we put all of that in. My hope would be that we can get a coherent global picture that allows then in each region where it's appropriate a coherent story to be told for the importance locally of things and how that fits in the international picture. And I think that's really important to keep in our minds when we're having this discussion.
So that's which
one? Andrew had an announcement before we break for lunch. I'm sorry for digging it into his checkbook.
He's
related. I wanted to make sure that you knew about the ideas which I did not say. Now, some of you may have already read the document, it is available and you can find it by googling NSA big ideas. There are six ideas that are cited and agreed. One of them is Windows and Windows. That is initiative of physics division, it is important for you to know, not astronomy division, like I have been saying. Astronomy division is part of that because we need to get more stakeholders for this to apply, but it's mostly motivated by LIGO and then you have any. I'm not supposed to log in any possible way, but if you hear about that, if you see a chance to put for this initiative in any way, this is a way to get more funding in the overall.
Thank you. Okay, so we'll be here at 1:30 for a wrap-up.